Warning, From the Back to Tank contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue.
We would be honored if you would join us.
How are you feeling? Your latest workups and your condition indicate that all damage has been reversed. Recovery is total. I believe you have been quite fortunate. No further thanks are necessary, Commander, but you are most welcome. It is my function and pleasure as a matter of right to help and heal you indeed.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
Ojabba.
All right, hello everybody. This is Star Wars From the Back to Tank, and I'm just swaying my hips back and forth to the beat. I got a toilet and a pog. Wait, a porg.
Porg.
Not a pog. What's a pog? Is it, isn't that like a white girl with a big ass? Wow. That was completely a mess up. Well, hey, listen. I'd rather have a pog rather than a porg, right? What would you... Hey, a toilet pog.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
That works. That works for me.
Wow, what a way to start a show. So I don't think it comes as a surprise to anybody why we're live right now. And it has a lot to do with a very small movie coming out soon.
Exactly. A very, very unknown movie.
Yeah. So the Star Wars The Last Jedi trailer has been dropped. It was released during the Monday night football game on ESPN. I don't think that was even a surprise. A lot of people were expecting it. A lot of people were tuning in.
Thanks to Mark Hamill.
Thanks to Mark Hamill and his non-vague tweets. And, of course, Rian Johnson tweeting about, what, 6-7 hours before, urging people. I would say he slightly urged people not to watch the trailer. And it sparked a lot of controversy as to why exactly he tweeted that out. Now, I'm taking it at face value. I don't think it was meant to be dramatic or any type of controversy. I think it's exactly what it was meant to be. It was, hey, guys, the trailer's awesome. It's not going to reveal too much because Lucasfilm would be complete morons to all of a sudden just drop way too much information. Because first off, Lucasfilm has done a very good job with trailers. They have released just enough to wet our whistles, but nothing to give away actual story aspects of the movies.
And people have to understand that basically when you create a trailer, you can edit things in a certain way to kind of
fit the teaser narrative.
Fit the teaser narrative, but also kind of like give red herrings to people so people will be thinking one thing and another.
Exactly. It's just a kind of a trick of the trade. Trailer houses, you know, studio companies that hire, what's the word I'm looking for? Outsourced. That's the word I'm looking for. Usually when these studios outsource to these companies that cut trailers, they kind of give them an idea of what they should do and what direction to take. And that's how they then proceed to cut their trailer. And usually, yes, it tells its own story. It tells us just enough to get us going. And Rian Johnson wasn't sure if he wanted people to see the trailer. He specifically said, hey, you might want to go in clean. And that is something that we have seen a lot more within the circles of audiences. More and more audiences are not watching trailers.
Because people have this fear of spoilers now.
Yeah, and you know what? To me, I love trailers. I remember when the internet became a big thing. Yes, I'm old. I remember when the internet became a thing. It started becoming more mainstream around 95, 96. And once that happened, you saw more and more websites, specifically IMDb. They were one of the first websites to really put out information on movies back in 95, 96. And they would drop trailers. And I would go through the entire catalog of trailers from the 70s and 80s that they had uploaded. And I just loved viewing trailers. I don't feel like they ever ruined the movies. It was a great way years ago to start promoting your upcoming films.
Yeah, it's a great trailers are kind of like one of those things that basically if you like, I know there's like a lot of like DVDs out there that put trailers together just so that you can watch trailers of old movies.
Yeah.
And I love those things.
Yeah, it's fun.
And the thing is, when you take a look at a trailer, it doesn't really give away too much of anything when you think about it.
Now, well, it depends on what studio is doing it. DC has a bad habit yes. that they've, it seems like they've mended their ways of late, but DC had a bad habit of throwing in like everything into their trailer. But I would say about 2 or 3 years ago, you started seeing the backlash on trailers, and a lot of people kind of like choose to put their head in the sand and say, I don't want to watch anything. And I don't understand that. I can never understand. I can't wrap my mind around that, because I'm waiting on hands and knees for that trailer to drop. And however, Rian Johnson urged people not to watch it, possibly hinting that there may be too much in that trailer. Do you think it was about that, or do you think it was just about, hey, why see anything else? Just go in and watch the movie. Don't have any preconceptions. Obviously, with Star Wars, there's always going to be preconceptions, but don't add to it.
I think Rian Johnson is the type of person that he knows how to gauge the audience. And one of the biggest things is like nowadays there is a movement where people do not like spoilers. And I can understand him saying that, hey, you might not like this because you might think that this is spoiling the movie.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like I think he's doing it so that basically he could kind of answer that backlash that might come.
I think he's a nervous director, and yeah. He doesn't want to be, you know, I don't think he wants to be abused after this movie comes out, even though I don't think he will. I think the movie's going to be good. However, we already know that you're not going to please everybody. And I almost feel like he's just kind of like, well, you know what? Let's not have any more preconceptions. Just go in and enjoy the movie. Don't let it ruin it for you. And it can also be the fact that he's just an ultra film nerd and he's a fan. He's all, don't see anything. Go in surprise. Maybe that's his own.
That could be it too.
It could be as simple as that it's his own opinion on the matter. Hey, if it was me, I don't want to see anything. I would just go in and be all fresh and new. However, that's not the case with me. I'm waiting at the very least. I want everything but actual spoilers. So I enjoyed it. What are your first thoughts, initial thoughts in a nutshell on the Last Jedi trailer?
Initial thoughts?
Yes, on the boner charts from 1 to 5 on the boner charts. Where did it measure? 5 being the most boner, and 1 being the least.
For me, I would have to say 5.
All right.
There was moments in that trailer that I was like going, wow, that gave me the chills.
Yeah.
And it's very, with a good trailer, you get one of those moments. With this trailer, I got like multiple moments where I was
multiple
like,
what the hell is going on? You got multiple orgasms.
And I literally went back and watched it like 4 times right away, basically just to see.
Oh, 4? You're a chump. I watched it like 10 times, Dave.
Well, I wanted to actually, you know, in my age, I'm getting really slow.
Yeah, there's only so many times.
There's only so many times, and then you get tired.
Yeah, like, can I complete, please? And then Star Wars trailer, can I rest a little bit, please?
Exactly. Can I rest? And, you know, and then I fall asleep. You know, it's just... It's just too much.
Do you clean up afterwards? Or you just pass out?
Just lie there. No. Just lie there. Yeah. Know. Let it dry.
You filthy animal. You're a filthy, filthy.
But like, honestly, dude, I mean, like, did it give away anything? No, but it did get me hyped for the movie big time.
Yeah, I agree. And there was a few things I was looking for in this trailer, Dave, for me. I also give it a 5 on the boner meter. And I didn't get anything I didn't expect, meaning... When you really look at this trailer, they pretty much gave you all the clues they gave to you in the very first teaser. They just did kind of an extension on some of those scenes. So they still kept the story closely under wraps. We still don't really have an idea of what the story is going to be about. There's definitely some misdirection included, obviously. We are, I mean, that's just a given. And not just with Star Wars, with all movie trailers, there's always that misdirection that's included in there. Unless we're talking about the Batman and Superman trailer where they give away the entire movie. That's a whole other thing.
That's
right?
A whole other thing.
However, there's things I was looking for because I knew we weren't going to get Luke Skywalker with a lightsaber. I knew there wasn't going to be those fanboy moments, those absolute fanboy moments. I knew they weren't going to be there. However, from an aesthetic point of view, there were things I was looking for. I was looking for the Star Wars vibe, of course. I was looking for the ongoing dramatization of the Skywalker family. And I was looking at the visuals, whether or not they would continue the amazing cinematography that The Force Awakens had. And that's something that people can listen to on our Force Awakens review. It was a highlight for me, was the poetic nature of J.J. Abrams' framing of his shots, mixed with the amount of lighting that he chose to go with for specific scenes. And it's something that we haven't seen in other movies. Not to say George Lucas didn't have a fantastic eye for framing. He did. He was more about the cinema of it all because he's from the tentpole movie era. So he was about those grand epic scapes, and they worked. However, JJ has a little bit more of an artistic eye as well. And that's something that he set the bar with in Force Awakens. And I was hoping with the change out of Rian Johnson that they would continue that. And so far with those shots, if you look at the color palette chosen in many of those scenes, they're telling its own story. And that's what I always look at. And that's what I wanted to find. And I was hoping to find in the upcoming trailer. Because obviously we're going to get the go-tos. We're going to get the lightsaber igniting. We're going to get the fight scenes. We're going to get the stormtrooper moments. There's certain elements that we can always expect to see in these types of Star Wars trailers. And they weren't a surprise. However, it doesn't take away from the boner meter because it's exciting to see all new fresh scenes that you've never seen before. And I have to say, Kylo Ren, even though we make fun of the moving scar of Kylo Ren, you know, Rian Johnson's director, what was it, director prerogative, I'm going to change this scar because I thought the one J.J. Abrams started in Force Awakens looked silly, and I'm going to move it over to his cheek and make it look more cool. I remember we bitched about that, and yes, he moved it, but at least it's not what we thought it was going to be. Do you remember we anticipated like a cool stereotypical pirate scar across the eye?
Yeah.
That's what we thought we were going to get. And fortunately, it's something different. We have some weird type of imperial, like, it looked like a meshing, like a metal mesh band-aid almost.
Yeah, right over his face.
Yeah, which would make sense because if you think about the lightsaber and how powerful it is, right? And how it can cut through almost anything, if you were to get slapped in the face with a lightsaber like he did, it would be such a bad scar, it would be unrepairable.
Yes.
He would just have a gouge. So instead of allowing the scar to heal, they seal it up with some type of mechanical mesh. Is that what it looks like?
Yeah, it's like a mechanical mesh. And it makes sense because if you think about it, we're dealing with a world where you could lose a limb and they'll replace it with a robotic hand. So it would make sense that basically, if you have like this deep gouge, they would basically replace the skin.
And especially when you're talking about damage inflicted by a lightsaber.
Yeah.
So I like that a lot. Those are the little things I found the most interesting to me. And of course, the go-to between Rey and Kylo with Luke's fear. Obviously, this is the narrative that the trailer has laid out for us. We don't know if this is in fact going to be the true story. However, we got to believe that there will be obviously trace elements of this within within the actual film itself. There looks to be a type of fear that Luke has in training Rey because of her raw, untapped power, which obviously reminds him of, I'm assuming, Kylo Ren. And I like that because it stays with the general theme that we've seen with training of the Skywalkers, much like Yoda when they met Anakin for the first time at the Jedi Council, and Qui-Gon Jinn presented Anakin to the Council and said he wanted to train them, or train him. And what did Samuel Jackson's character, Mace Windu, and Yoda both say? They both were opposed to the idea and said there's much danger that we sense in his training. So if there was danger in Anakin's training, it would make sense for Luke to be also cautious. It just fits the mold or the theme of Star Wars. You know, I should say the motif of Star Wars so far at this point. So I like that. That would make sense. However, David, I also hope that Luke Skywalker doesn't chomp out. I hope that's not his story.
Well,
fear to train.
That's the thing, though. It's like, I kind of dug that moment when Luke basically literally says, I've seen this power before, and I wasn't afraid of it then, but now I am.
I'm okay with him being cautioned.
Yeah.
Being cautious, because that would make sense. But I'm hoping that isn't all he does in the movie. That's he's the buffer between Rey's progression as a potential Jedi or potential Force wielder, whatever she ends up being. Because we've already seen that. And unfortunately, because we've jumped, you know, how many years? 20-some, 30-some years between Return of the Jedi and Force Awakens, we never witnessed any of that. So we never saw Luke Skywalker not fear the training of Kylo. We're just going to have to take it. And then we see Luke, who's now a cautious hermit. And again, that would make sense.
Yeah.
But I hope there's much more to his character. And I'm willing to bet there is. I'm not being negative. I'm willing to bet there is more. I just hope that's not the main purpose of his character in Episode 8. The cautionary character that warns of danger.
I think though that makes sense to be the cautionary character, though, because, like, if you think about it, the way I was thinking about it was, if Qui-Gon was still alive, he would probably turn into this, knowing that basically Anakin turned into Darth Vader. And if Qui-Gon was put into this position, he'd be terrified.
No, I agree with you, Dave. I'm not disagreeing, but do you really want Luke that? Do you want that after all these years of never seeing Luke? Do you really want him to be a cautionary character?
Not fully.
That's my point. Like, I want to see so much more.
I want to see more.
And that's maybe my Star Wars baby moment where this is what I want. This might be my fanboy moment, but so be it. We've waited so many years to see Luke Skywalker, right?
Yeah, that's why the other scenes in the movie kind of like quelled that fear in me, because we do see Luke train her. We do see him take this, like, almost. And the thing that I really dug was he wasn't like, I was expecting him to be like Obi-Wan and Yoda, to be kind of like that, you know, very
He's more wise, and it does
he's
make
more wise, and he's more straightforward.
Yeah,
he's kind of like he's not like Yoda, where Yoda talks in riddles, or Obi-Wan might talk in riddles. Luke, when he's training, is basically like saying, "This is not what you're going to expect," and he's like straightforward with it. He doesn't dance around the train. He doesn't dance around his words. So it's kind of interesting that the way he learned is something that he doesn't teach.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a lot of additional scenes throughout the trailer that are definitely worthy of discussion. It looks like we'll continue the internal struggle of Kylo Ren, which I like. I think it works. And if he struggles with that internal need to rid himself of his humanity, I would definitely welcome that. I love tragedy. I love tragic endings, and I hope they continue that. I'm not saying I want him to have a tragic end per se. However, I want there to be internal struggle, internal tragedy throughout the run of this trilogy. And it looks like we're getting more of that with Kyle, that he's not going to just be full on evil despite the fact that he killed his father. It looks like it's not as over as he thought it would be.
Yeah.
He felt that by killing his father, it would rid him of this weakness. And based on the scenes that we were privy to in this trailer, I think we can definitely it's safe to assume that that's not the case, that he's still going to have that struggle. And I think it works. We also saw a potential alliance. Again, that is what the trailer set up. But it looks like, based on the trailer, that there will be a potential alliance between Kylo Ren and Rey.
Potentially.
And I feel like it would work if it's done very delicately. I don't want to see the downward spiral of Rey. And I know a lot of people have already taken those breadcrumbs and eaten them and
ran with it
and then shit them out all over Twitter saying, oh, Rey's going to go dark. Rey's going to go dark. And I think that's too obvious. And yeah. It's also been there, done that. I don't mind borrowing similar tropes and similar patterns and themes that work with Star Wars, like Force Awakens did. I think that makes sense. However, borrowing actual narrative decisions for characters, I think would be a massive stumble in terms of Lucasfilm's story. And I don't think that's what they're going to do, because we've already seen that. We've already seen someone turn to the dark side. I don't feel like Lucasfilm is looking to tell that story again.
No,
I think the story is very different than what we've seen with Skywalker and his Anakin Skywalker and his fall to the dark side. And that's the very reason why we didn't watch Kylo Ren's fall to the dark side, because we've already seen it. It's okay saying, hey, this is what happened. Now we're starting here after he's already fallen. That's okay as well. But there's a reason why Lucasfilm chose not to tell that story. It's because we've seen it. So I don't think they're now going to retread on similar territory in terms of actual character story arcs and say, hey, now it's Rey's turn to turn. It's Rey's turn to turn to the dark side.
No, and the thing is, the feeling I got from this trailer was the fact that it's more than just it's now not the dark side and the light side anymore.
You mean Jedi and Sith?
Yeah, it's not the Jedi and the Sith anymore. People are saying, oh, she's going to fall to the dark side. She's falling to the dark side. I'm like going, well, we all know that basically there is no Jedi and Sith anymore. In the past trailer, Luke basically said the Jedi have to fall, or the Jedi are no more.
The Jedi must end.
So, saying that basically, oh, Rey's going to fall to the dark side. Well, what's that? What's the dark side? Sith? There is no Sith. So
it's going to be about the balance.
The balance thing, and I think that people are ignoring that.
Well, I just think the mainstream hasn't followed all the breadcrumbs like we've. You know, if everyone has listened to our show, countless millions of people, please listen to our shows. We have discussed the balance, and I think that's the bigger picture. And the people who've listened to our shows know that's something we keep going back to. If you look at everything that has been laid out since the beginning of the new era of Star Wars, when Disney bought Lucasfilm, that has been the breadcrumbs that has been dropped for us to follow. It's been less about Jedi and Sith and more about the light and the dark and good and bad and the balance. That has been the focus. And if they were to join forces, Kylo Ren and Rey, to combat a greater evil, would that not make sense? And would that not fit in the mold of Star Wars? Not just the new era, but even what George Lucas has set in stone about the balance and the prophecy of the one that will bring balance to the Force. What if the balance is two sides working together to combat evil?
Yeah.
The dark and the light. Not the light becoming bad and not the dark being bad, but the combination of the two working together. Two sides of a coin. And doesn't that date back to old Star Wars EU stuff that has now been retconned about the yin and the yang, the daughter and the son, that live on a Force planet? We talked about it during, I believe, our Star Wars Rebels discussion.
Yeah.
And the Bindu. And people who don't watch Star Wars Rebels, Google the Bindu on the Star Wars Wiki, and you can read all about the balance. And the Bindu have been reintroduced into Star Wars canon. So the idea of the balance is there. So I think that's more or less what we're going to get, rather than the fall and the rise of an individual going to the dark side. I think that'll be the main focus when it comes to Kylo and Rey.
Yeah.
It's going to be about the balance.
It's going to be about them working as one and bringing the Force together.
And I would be okay with that. I would actually be, I think it's really cool and different. I mean, and think of the abomination that is when you really think about it to the Jedi way of thinking. You're working with the dark side. Like, yeah, that would be something new and just completely out of the box thinking in terms of what we've seen in Star Wars movies. Yes, it's not out of the box when you look at all the expanded EU stuff we've gotten throughout the years. But when it comes to movies, that would be an interesting little turn of events, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because, like, if you think about it, like, the Jedi and the Sith, outside of the EU, and the main thing, we've always been taught that the Jedi and the Sith are two opposing forces that war against each other constantly. And for, like, two, quote-unquote, dark side user and a light side user to actually work together as one, it goes against the tenets of everything that, you know, the in Star Wars, quote-unquote, canon right now has gone on. Because, like, we've been taught that basically since the prequels that the Sith and the Jedi have fought. The Jedi defeated the Sith.
It's been an ongoing
war. It's been an ongoing war. Yeah. Well, what happens if, like, two of them decide to say, no, we're going to work together?
Yeah, wouldn't that be the ultimate, wouldn't that be the ultimate villain for them, for the other side, for the opposing factions or the opposing sides? Yeah, I think it's going to work. I don't know exactly how it's going to play out. Obviously, I don't think anybody knows, and we could be completely wrong. However,
That's the thing about our trailer.
Yeah, and it would make sense, though, again, based on a lot of the breadcrumbs that has been dropped throughout the last few years. It would make sense. Now, we've also seen a few additional shots, and we're not going to spend much more time on those, David. I feel like it's a lot of, like I said, similar scenes we've discussed already. I think another takeaway is the Finn and Captain Phasma battle that looks like is going to go down.
Yep.
How do you feel, David, about taking swordsmanship and swordsplay from the Jedi? Because in the past, the people who fight are Jedis, right? Force people. How do you feel about seeing a fight scene in a Star Wars movie that has nothing to do with Jedi and it's between Finn and Captain Phasma? Do you think that's a good call?
I think it is, because, like, here's the thing. We have to understand that they're trying to actually promote that the universe is larger than what we thought.
Right.
So if the way I was, like, I always thought was, like, when everyone was, like, saying, oh, why is been allowed to use a lightsaber, I'm like going, why can't he use a lightsaber? It's a tool.
Yeah, but it's also a Jedi weapon. It's sacred. If he's not a Jedi, he shouldn't be wielding it. That's how I feel as a Star Wars nerd.
He can still activate it, and he can swing it like a bat.
Yeah, guess what? I can also activate my dick and swing that like a bat. It doesn't mean I'm going to go into battle with it.
Exactly. But I actually personally like it because, like, it shows that basically there's more to the stormtroopers and everything and all their training.
Yeah.
Because if you think about it, it is ridiculous that basically the stormtroopers, you mean to tell me that they're so inept that they don't know how to fight hand.
Valid point, Dave. And you just won me over. You're right. We're led to believe that stormtroopers and first order troopers are like top of the line troopers. Right. And yet we never really see them do anything. So, you know what? That's a valid point. Maybe we do need to see something like that that justifies. I mean, in all actuality, Finn is nothing more than a stormtrooper as well. So to see that he is trained in the ways of combat, I think it would make sense. You're right.
It would make sense.
I just don't know how I feel as a Star Wars nerd, how I feel about taking those scenes from our Force wielders and giving them to other people who aren't Force wielders. And maybe that's me stuck in the Star Wars past, and maybe this is Lucasfilm moving forward saying, hey, we've already seen the Jedi fight. Let's see other people fight as well.
Yeah.
And that's something that Force Awakens is doing. It isn't just about Rey and Luke. It's about Finn and Poe Dameron, and they each have their own character arcs. And that's something that even in the original trilogy, we didn't really see. Han Solo was more of a supporting character. Yes, he is considered a lead in the movies, but when you really think about it, his story was more or less there to support Luke Skywalker, even in Empire, where he had a lot of screen time.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. What was his entire story arc? It was about eventually getting to Bespin, to where he will be used, him and Leia, as a way or a means to lure Luke to Cloud City. So there's always been a supporting cast to support our lead Force wielder. Even in the prequels, it's always been about the Force wielders, the Jedis. So Force Awakens started something very different, where the story wasn't just about the Force wielders. It was about Finn and Poe Dameron, people who have nothing to do with the Force. So if that's the route that they're taking, then so be it. I just don't know. I feel conflicted. I feel conflicted about it. And that, again, might be my own taste as a Star Wars fan, because as I've said time and time again, David, I'm the type of Star Wars fan that only really cares about the mythological side of Star Wars, the myth of the Force and the dark side and the light side and Jedi. That's why I watch Star Wars. I don't watch Star Wars for Stormtroopers or Boba Fett, even though I appreciate them and I think they're cool. As a Star Wars fan, I will always gravitate to the myth, to the mythological aspect of Star Wars.
Yeah, and I understand that. And also, the thing that dawned on me too is kind of like for Star Wars fans now that are saying that basically, you know, the Jedi are the only ones allowed, or Jedi and Sith are the only ones to wield a lightsaber of some sort. Right?
Yeah. Yes.
What about in Rebels?
No. I don't like that.
Remember in...
What are you talking about?
Who is it? Sabine Wren.
Yeah, Star Wars Rebels.
I
don't feel like it's bad story writing. I think Star Wars Rebels is amazing. However, I think I might have said that in our Star Wars Rebels discussion, that I didn't really like the idea of Sabine wielding the darksaber, right?
It's the darksaber.
I don't know how I feel about that. Like, it kind of bothers me. That's a Jedi's weapon.
Yes.
But they made it work, because in Star Wars Rebels, it was more of a symbol.
It was a
rather
symbol
than a true weapon of Mandalore. It was a symbol that represented leadership and control. So, and on that note, Dave, we both give it, what, five on the boner meter?
Oh, five on the boner meter.
All right, we're going to go to a very quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to jump into the rest of the Star Wars news from Mark Hamill's spiel on Carrie Fisher and her purpose moving forward in Star Wars. Also, Star Wars Battlefront news, Battlefront 2 news, and there's some interesting little tidbits pertaining to the world of Star Wars that is actually being put in this new video game. I know we don't have a lot of gamers. I don't think everyone that listens to this show is a gamer. However, I think this information is very important to all Star Wars fans, because it may give us clues as to what to expect in upcoming movies and the future Star Wars. David, we'll be right back.
We're back to Tank is coming right up.
No.
Have you ever wanted something so bad that you do just about anything for it? Well, that's exactly how we feel about you. That's right. AdamandEve.com wants you so bad. We're giving you 10 free gifts with your first order. You heard me right. That's 10 free gifts to spice up your love life. First, you'll get a sexy surprise for her. Second, an adventurous toy for him. And third, a little something we know you'll both enjoy. Plus, you'll get 6 full-length adult movies on DVD. And number 10, free shipping on your entire order. That's 10 free gifts for you shy types who've never tried Adam and Eve before. Just go to AdamandEve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy, a sexy piece of lingerie, or anything you desire. Just enter offer code DEAL30 at checkout, and you'll get all 10 free gifts, including free shipping. That's offer code DEAL30. That's DEAL30 at AdamandEve.com.
Well, I'm not plotting to kill Barry Allen. I'm listening to Ryan Denton on Rain Man Digital's DC on CW.
Ray Palmer better run if that's what she's going to look like.
Oh.
to be fair.
Is that the ultimate meet your mother? Like, yeah. Look at the lady you're marrying's mother.
Oh,
that's
look,
what she's
going
to
she
be
is.
Like.
Yeah.
To be fair, the world would not be so kind back then.
Can I see what you're going to look like, please? Can we go back?
Gideon,
can you pull up a picture of so-and-so in 2000 whatever? I gotta get out.
I think all of us would look like garbage.
I'm sorry, Ray.
I look like garbage now.
I can't
look up that picture, it's been deleted from
She's
my memory.
She's not that old to look like that. Come on.
Ray Dang. Palmer better put together a workout routine.
No shit.
Like, hey, babe, just go ahead and start working. Just
Pilates.
Are you going to eat that? You probably shouldn't.
P90X, baby. Babe.
Rip Hunter said you can't mess with the timeline. let her eat.
You guys are the...
Check out the new DC fan show, DC on CW, covering topics from The Arrow, The Flash, and the new Legends of Tomorrow. Head over to RainmanDigitalMedia.com to get more details.
Star Wars from the Bacta Tank.
Become pregnant with Anakin, and the mother basically makes the comment, she doesn't know.
I touched myself once. With an old lightsaber I found.
It's
how did you become pregnant? Well, I found an old lightsaber and I rubbed it on myself and poof, I was pregnant.
Listen to the Star Wars from the Bacta Tank late night replay Monday through Friday, starting at 1 a.m. Pacific, only on Rain Man Channel 001. Listen from the Rain Man digital app or tune in. Just search RM Channel 001.
Yo, yo, you are
hold on. This is Stormtrooper 1. This is just a friendly reminder. Please leave us a review on Stitcher. Go to Stitcher.com and search From the Bat to Take. Every review left helps us get seen by more people. And we thank you so much. Remember, go to Stitcher.com and search From the Bat to Take. Thank you.
This is so exciting to see in your side.
Hey, you're not supposed to be in the studio.
Whoops!
See that red light? Yeah, that means I'm live. On the air.
This is very, very bad.
Get out.
You need a teacher. I could show you the ways of the Force.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Star Wars from the Back to Tank. You're listening to us on RM Channel 001. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. Just search Star Wars from the Back to Tank and take us anywhere you want to go. Also, the Rain Man Digital app, David. You can now download the app on iOS app stores as well as Google Play. Just search Rain Man Digital and take this live 24/7 channel with you, as well as all of our on-demand content on the network, including, of course, a Star Wars show.
The Force will be strong with you if you do this.
Yes, it will. And I would get a 5 on the boner meter. All right, so Mark Hamill on the original plans for Carrie Fisher in Star Wars Episode 9. Mark Hamill recently went to the New York Comic Con this past weekend, and he spoke about Star Wars Episode 9, specifically discussing the kind of role that Carrie Fisher would have had in the sequel's trilogy closing chapter. According to the USA Today, they have a few excerpts from Hamill's discussion at the Comic-Con. And this is a direct quote. He says, "You're going to really love her in Last Jedi. I know they're going to try and find a way to close her story in Episode 9 that gives her the respect she deserves, because Han Solo was more prominent in 7, The Force Awakens, Luke's a little more prominent in 8, and certainly Leia was meant to be more prominent in 9. Worldwide, everyone feels that gap she left, but we all have to hang in there." Now, the article from USA Today goes on to say that there has been personal speculation on what to do with Leia and her absence, and what they may or may not end up doing with her character. There was major issues with their writing, Dave. You know, they had this big grand plan to close out this new chapter of the Skywalker story with her at the front for the final movie. And now they're left scrambling, scrambling to figure out what they're going to do. Now, there's ways, according to various articles and also Mark Hamill's discussion at Comic-Con, that they have plans and how they're going to do it. And as of now, based on a few articles that have been released over the last couple of weeks, Leia will, in fact, still be a prominent part of Episode 9, but they're going to have to creatively find a way to explain away her absence from the actual picture itself. However, they are alluding to the fact that, much like what they did with Episode 7 and Mark Hamill, not saying they're going to do the exact same thing, like, where is he at? We can't find her. You know, they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
However, just like they managed to kind of tuck Mark Hamill away, Luke Skywalker's character away in Force Awakens to the very end, there's speculation that they're going to be doing the exact same thing, because Force Awakens was, without a doubt, all about Luke Skywalker. Yes. The entire premise was built around the mystery of Luke Skywalker and where he was at. And if they were to go about it that same route, they could definitely make it work for Princess Leia. And there has been confirmation, though, Dave, that no matter what, they will not be killing her off.
The thing I'm worried about, though, is kind of like, I really don't want a... While I love Rogue One, I don't want them to use that technology again.
Well, because it's not very good?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... Because, and Dave, you know why? I agree with you. I agree with you. And because I think it worked at that time in Rogue One, but... Like I said before, in 4, 5, 6 years, the replayability for Rogue One is going to be laughable. When you go back and look at Princess Leia, you'll be like, oh, my God, that was horrible.
When
Why
you
would you do
Princess
that?
Look at Princess Leia and look at Tarkin. Yeah. And I'm like going, I just hope they don't try to do that again, because
I don't think
it
so.
It was really jarring in Rogue One.
It was. I don't think it was a deal breaker. It didn't ruin the movie for me. But yeah, you're right. Jarring is a great word for it, because Tarkin, I felt, worked a bit better because he has such odd features that it works. He has mechanical features to begin with, and he's very stoic and lifeless.
Yeah.
And so to make his character the way they did in Rogue One, I felt worked. But with Princess Leia, it was a bit jarring, specifically because we know what she looked like when she was younger. Whereas Tarkin hasn't really aged in this time period. So it's an odd thing with technology. And I'm on board with your way of thinking. I don't feel like they should CGI her face. And I don't think they're going to, based on various tweets that have gone out by Lucasfilm. I don't think they're going to be doing that. In fact, I think Rian Johnson even specifically said they're definitely not doing it in The Last Jedi, which is a given, because as far as I know and remember, they had already finished shooting all of her scenes anyways before she had passed away, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. So we don't have to worry about that type of problem for Last Jedi. It's more or less the upcoming Episode 9. It's something that I'm sure the producers and writers are scrambling on, and I don't envy JJ. I feel bad for the dude that the guy comes back and this is what he's stuck with.
But you know what? I'm glad that JJ's there, because he's probably the only one that could probably handle this delicately.
I hope so. I definitely agree that he's a talent to be reckoned with. He's a fantastic filmmaker and he understands Star Wars. So I have no problem with him coming back, as most people know. But it's definitely going to be a tough way. It's going to be tough when you've built this franchise around the three of the icons and you brought them back. You have Han Solo, Luke Skywalker, and now Princess Leia. And you built this entire idea around them, and now you have to figure out how you're going to get rid of her when she's such an important part of the resistance at this point. How do you get rid of her in a way that that is just and doesn't feel heavy-handed?
That was the one thing in the trailer that I was like thinking, I hope in Last Jedi it's not too heavy-handed. That if you notice, like, Poe Dameron became like the spokesman of the resistance,
right?
In the very end,
you think he's going to take on that role?
I think that's what they have to do.
Yeah,
because
it also gives Poe Dameron something to do.
Yeah, it gives him something to do.
As we progress farther into the storyline for Last Jedi, like I don't feel like Poe Dameron unless they find that role for him, I don't feel like he's relevant. In fact, in a lot of ways, I like him a lot. I thought he was a really cool character, but he wasn't really relevant in Force Awakens. He was just a pilot of an X-Wing, you know, like, eh. So in order to make him relevant, you bring up a great point. What if they were to make him the figurehead or a more of a leader?
Yeah. And that's why I was like going, I hope it's not too heavy handed, because it's obvious that someone has to take over the role that's going to be emptied by Princess Leia.
Yeah.
Because Carrie Fisher's not around.
Yeah, I think it's a good call. I think they'll do that. I think that I'd even pick up on that in the trailer, and you're right. And I think that would make a lot of sense and give his character, who is interesting, because the actor that plays Poe Dameron is very charismatic. He has a lot of great screen presence.
Yeah.
And I feel like that would be a great way to, you know, throw his character into that position, a position of authority, much like they did with Han Solo and making him a general. It gave him a little bit more of a purpose in Return of the Jedi, if you remember.
Yeah.
So it might work. It might work. You might be onto something, Dave. Also, Star Wars Battlefront 2 story scenes details the Emperor's final plan. Now, this is news for even those of you who are not gamers.
I know.
And yep. I really believe that this is something that all Star Wars fans, if you truly care about the world and the ever evolving world of Star Wars, you got to know what's happening within Star Wars. This is a huge thing that they're doing within the story mode of Star Wars Battlefront 2. And even if you weren't playing games and you're not a gamer, it's such an interesting part of the Star Wars saga. And it's also the beginning elements of what we see taking place in the ever-expanding universe, particularly in the Aftermath trilogy of books that have come out over the past 2 years. Now, according to Kotaku website, I never even heard of that. Good job. Star Wars Battlefront 2 story scenes details the Emperor's final plan to crush the rebellion. This is just awesome. EA's upcoming video game happens during the time between episode 6 and episode 7 of the Star Wars movies. A new snippet of Battlefront 2 story mode shows the start of Emperor Palpatine's posthumous scorched earth scheme to leave the galaxy in ruins after his death. The order being given in the clip above is called Operation Cinder, which essentially calls for wreaking havoc on a bunch of planets with artificially altered environmental disasters once Palpatine meets his demise.
Yes.
So he had put a failsafe, according to the Lucasfilm Story Group's new ideas for Emperor Palpatine and his afterlife adventures. They are still utilizing Palpatine's ideology and politics to kind of, I want to say, carve out the narrative of this universe that we find ourselves in. And it may even bleed over into reasons why we have the First Order, according to the EU installment Aftermath, the Aftermath trilogy. Now, according to Star Wars Wiki, if you're not in the know when it comes to the Operation Cinder, the opening scene of Star Wars Battlefront 2 story mode begins with an odd droid-like version of Palpatine. Now, what he's actually inside of, it's a holographic image inside of what they're calling a Sentinel.
Yeah.
Okay. Sentinels were a type of droid model used by the Galactic Empire and programmed to serve the will of the Galactic Emperor Sheev Palpatine. The droids were manufactured in the Imperial base on the planet Vatine and were capable of playing pre-recorded messages from their head. After the death of Palpatine during the Battle of Endor, multiple Sentinel droids known as the Messengers carried the late Emperor's posthumous messages to Imperial commanders, which ordered to begin Operation Cinder.
Dude, I after seeing this, I'm like going, I'm so happy they're going this route.
I agree. And it is, it's a very slippery slope, David, because I'm not a fan of bringing back characters. Once they're dead, let them die. I feel like a lot of times in fandoms, we return to the well way too many times. And I love Palpatine. In fact, my concern for this new trilogy, Last Jedi, and Force Awakens is that they don't have, and again, not that we know of yet, and this is the point of this discussion, David, right now. Palpatine has always been the thread that has kept the entire Star Wars story kind of tied together. Yes, it was about Skywalker, but who was manipulating from day one in Phantom Menace? The Skywalker saga, yes, was about the rise and fall of Anakin, like George Lucas has stated. And then, of course, his retribution and redemption by way of his son. That is the story. But what's the manipulative thread that has kind of propelled this narrative? It's always been Palpatine. He's always been in the shadows, which is very suiting for his character. And that was kind of my concern for these new movies, that these are the first movies where we don't have that thread. We don't have the Palpatine thread. And this might be an interesting way to keep his politics involved and his ever manipulative tactics, even after he has been dead and gone for years.
Yeah, because it fits his character that I could definitely see Palpatine planning stuff even after his death.
Absolutely.
And having like plans C through E, just waiting and for his death to happen.
Yeah. Now, so, Operation Cinder, David, was carried out, according to the wiki, it was carried out by the Galactic Empire as a means of devastating several Imperial planets in 4ABY, which is after Battle of Yavin. Only a few weeks following the Battle of Endor, the operation was part of the contingency, as we were just discussing, a plan devised by Emperor Palpatine to ensure that the Empire and its enemies did not outlive him should he perish. The plan was put into action following the Emperor's death during the Battle of Endor. Part of Operation Cinder called for the devastation of Naboo, the Emperor's homeworld, and that's just to name a few. I'm going to post this link on our website when our show goes on demand. I'll have these reference points on our site so you can go through and look at them so you don't have to go search them up. But it creates an interesting argument or discussion point, Dave, about Operation Cinder. We already know that his contingency plan does play a big part in the expanded universe. Of course, Battlefront 2 will be tackling the very first stages of that contingency.
Yes.
But as we know, the aftermath story that has to do with, which has a major part with the political landscape of what we see in Last Jedi, the events that happen in Aftermath shape everything that we see in Episode 7. That's why they created Aftermath. They wanted people to understand the political landscape, the factions, the different groups of militia, the Rebel Alliance, and where they actually fall into place, and how the Resistance plays a place, or not plays, and how the Resistance plays their part, and then also where the First Order comes in. And this contingency plan was a part of that as well.
Yes.
So if they're making a point to explain the first stages and it goes and bleeds through into the Aftermath trilogy, does that make you think that possibly this contingency may have a hand in shaping what we may see in either Last Jedi or even maybe possibly the final installment of the new trilogy, Episode 9?
I think it makes complete sense.
Yeah.
Because like LucasArts films at this point, they've started this whole thing. We've discussed about it before about cross-platforming. They wanted to cross-platform everything from books to comics, like video games to the movies, everything.
Transmedia is called.
Transmedia. Thank you. But basically like it makes sense to actually have this storyline happen in a video game, and then it might actually explain certain things that we might see in Last Jedi.
Yep.
And that's why I'm very interested to see, like, how far did Operation Cinder succeed? Like, did they actually blow up a couple of planets and leave them like totally scarred and uninhabitable? I mean, we don't know what happened to Naboo.
Do we not know yet?
From what I've seen and what I've researched, Nothing has been said what happens to Naboo.
According to the wiki, and this is not this is actual canon, it says the Emperor's homeworld, Naboo, in order to accomplish their plans, Imperial forces place satellites in orbit of Naboo to form a climate disruption array. Electrical storms and other extreme weather events began ravaging the planet. Lieutenant Shera Bay of the Alliance to Restore the Republic commanded Sasha Sarunu, Queen of Naboo, and Princess Leia Organa, one of the leaders of the Alliance, into orbit, where they began destroying the satellites. Yeah. They stopped the destruction.
They stopped the destruction because apparently the Emperor wanted to kill Jar Jar, just we all do. But that's what I want to see in Battlefront 2 is actually that whole synopsis you gave there.
Yeah.
Are we going to actually play a part in that?
Yeah.
And we can see it.
It'd be awesome.
Really cool.
It'd be really cool to see. And it just and this is the these are the benefits of having one giant story. There are potential pitfalls when you're dealing with these massive stories. I think they could potentially write themselves in the holes down the road. In the next 4 or 5 years, it could become a little more tedious to write original stories when you're worrying about comics and video games and movies and TV shows. If they want to stay within the same time period, it may start being a little more difficult down the road. However, the benefit is just amazing because you get these little foreshadowing moments. This is the reason why, Dave, you and I can always point to Exhibit A, Exhibit B when we're dealing with the balance of the Force and potentially things we may see in upcoming movies like The Last Jedi. It's because of the fact that the expanded universe is more connected in a way that it has never been before in Star Wars history. It actually matters. The things that happens are no longer reactionary to the movies. In the past, with the old EU that got retconned, they reacted to the movies. Does that make sense? They were extensions of the movies, but they never did anything to propel the movies themselves. Now with this new EU, and that's the cool thing about it, is that they actually matter in terms of ramifications of what we see happening in EU is foreshadowing or breadcrumbs for what we may see in movies. So it's really fun. They have to be careful, but it is fun.
It's really fun, and it's actually a really good example of universe building and mythos building.
Yeah,
it's
helped.
It's helped a lot. And that's why I feel that, just like what we've always alluded to, is kind of like I want them to start at this point in after Last Jedi, I want them to start moving forward with their stories. And we've talked about this in the past. Is kind of like we don't want to tread on the past. You know, a Han Solo film. Okay, everyone's actually now talking about an Obi-Wan film. Okay, it's something that we wanted, but now do we really need it?
Yeah.
I mean, if like stories like this in Battlefront 2 are really successful, why can't we do original content like this in movies?
I agree. I 100% agree. And that's actually a great way to end the show on, because that's a topic we're going to be discussing in a future Patreon exclusive show. We're going to be talking about the moving on aspect of the Lucasfilm franchise in relation to Star Wars. When should they decide to move on, and should they move on? And that's going to be available later next week on patreon.com/Rainman Digital. It's part of our exclusive Patreon shows. You can pledge, what is it, $5? Yeah, yes, $5. $5 or more a month, and you can actually gain access to additional hours of Star Wars discussions where we discuss and break down comic books, books, and then, of course, this topic that we're going to be discussing, the ins and outs of moving on and when it's time to move on within the Star Wars universe. And we're going to be using references and examples from various installments that we've already seen in the Star Wars universe. So I want to thank you, David, for coming into the studio today, as usual.
Thank you.
I can't do this show without you. Well, I could, but it'd probably be weird. Just talking to myself. And also want to thank the listeners. If you like our show, please share it. Put it on iTunes give us a review on iTunes and Stitcher. And please share. Give us a thumbs up. And may the Schwartz be with each and every one of you.
Schwartz be with you.
No, the Schwartz.
Hello, this is Stormtrooper 1, and if you've missed any portion of the show, you can always head over to FromTheBackToTank.com and listen to the show at your leisure. We're also on Stitcher, Smart Radio, Stitcher.com, search Bacta, and add us to your favorites. Thank you, and listen responsibly. And may the Force be with you. And long live. Thank you for listening to From the Back to Tank. And From the Back to Tank is executive produced by Michael Flores and Dustin Lucas. Hosted by Michael Flores, David Zabal. You can find out more about our show by going to www.fromthebacktotank.com. You can also find us on Twitter at FromBackToTank, as well as Facebook, facebook.com/FromTheBackToTank. Thank you.